This podcast is brought to you by Medical Plastics News, the leading voice in polymer innovation for the medical sector. To read more and to subscribe, visit medicalplasticsnews.com. Hello and welcome to the FemTech series on the MedTalk podcast, where we discuss the latest news and issues in life sciences. I'm Olivia Freit, the editor of Medical Plastics News, and today we're joined by Laura Friedelhurst, the Managing Director and Principal Consultant at LFH Regulatory, where we will discuss the current regulatory landscape and how this affects FemTech devices. So Laura, could you tell us a bit about LFH Regulatory and your background?
Yeah, of course. So I started the business in 2019. I initially started as an independent contractor. And at the time, I started building a client portfolio. My son was due in May 2021. And in that time, that's when I realised that I needed to bring in resource to carry on that business continuity for my clients. And from there, I brought in the first member of the team in February 2021. And from there, we've gone from a team of two through to a team of nine now in the business. And that's within a period of just over 4 years. So essentially, as a business, what we offer is we are a regulatory and quality consultancy. So we work with a lot of manufacturers around the regulations of medical devices and IVDs. But we will offer support, anything from feasibility of a device, so maybe they have an idea, through the design process, through to the approval and bringing product onto the market, depending where they are globally. But also as well, if a client, for example, has any issues around any, you know, kind of non-compliance, then what we do is we help them to remediate that and make sure that they can keep their product on the market.
For FemTech products in particular, do you think there are enough women involved in the process?
I think that's a very difficult question to answer because it's looking at actually who is part of that approval process and what their background is. Now, when we look at it from a regulatory perspective, yes, because we know it's quite heavily weighted with females in the industry, whereas we look at other aspects and it might be that they need certain credentials to allow them to do the approval, and that might not be the case, but it's something that I'm not sure of how that would look. Certainly, I think when it does come to approval, it's about having that appreciation maybe for the FemTech aspect and what that involves to get it through the approval process.
Okay, and if we were to turn it around, do you think men lack a certain understanding of FemTech products?
I think when we look at FemTech, yes, they might lack an understanding of the problems that women face, and looking at the actual devices that can be brought to help alleviate them issues. But I think when we look at from a regulatory point of view, not necessarily the case, because when we look at the regulations that sit around FemTech approval, it's the overview of the actual regulation is the same as what we'd look at for any device.
And would you consider FemTech devices to be more specialist?
I think, again, from an understanding and looking at it from a testing perspective, things like that. So not necessarily the regulatory framework that we'd look at. We'd always look at the regulatory framework and apply it to the actual device type. But when it comes to that, no. But when it comes to other aspects, so things like meeting the actual regulation itself, yes, potentially around the testing aspect. So there might be specific standards for testing of those devices to make sure that they're safe and perform as intended. So that can have an impact. And certainly I think from, you know, when we look at the risk perspective and identifying risks as well.
Would you say femtech devices need more attention in the approvals process?
Not necessarily, because if we look at the regulation already and we look at the way that, you know, it's dependent on risk of device, so risk to patient, a classification of device, and that will determine the scrutiny of the actual device itself. So I think the framework's there to deal with it. It's just about looking at applying it to the device as well to understand the actual classification risk of device, and that would then result in the potential harm to the end user.
And do you think that femtech devices should have their own specific framework?
I think that's very difficult, because when we look already at the regulatory landscape, that we certainly when we look at the UK and we look at the EU. So in the UK, we know that from Brexit, we need to look at an actual regulatory framework for the UK, because at the moment it's based on the old UK MDR 2002. Now, that is essentially based on the EU directives. Okay. And we will be looking at some form of regulation coming to, you know, into force in the UK. But then we throw into the mix as well around the EU MDR and IVDR and the transitions that manufacturers are looking at. So for us to, again, start putting something into place for femtech as well would be quite difficult to do and for manufacturers to adhere to. Now, you know, when we look at the fact that the regulation, again, we apply that to the device itself and it goes through the approval process, I personally do not think that there needs to be a specific regulation that sits for femtech, but more around looking at actually, is there certain ISO standards we can be looking at which might dictate around testing, again, to test for kind of performance of device, making sure it's safe. But also as well thrown in there, let's have a look at the risk aspect of the device and as well clinical. So when we start looking at clinical and, you know, the literature aspect of this, again, this all governs it governs a story for it, which then looks at the safety profile of the device itself.
This episode of the MedTalk podcast is brought to you by MedTech Innovation Expo, the UK and Ireland's leading event for medical device manufacturing. Save the date for MedTech Innovation Expo 2024, taking place on the 5th and 6th of June at the NEC in Birmingham. For more information, please visit www.medtechexpo.com.
And in your personal opinion, do you think that there are enough femtech devices on the market?
You know, certainly as a business, we haven't, you know, I can't say if there is or not, but certainly as a business, we haven't seen a lot of our inquiries aren't based around femtech, which would suggest to me that actually there does need to be a spike in innovation and looking at driving femtech. Because if you think about when it first came around in 2016 and the talk around femtech, you know, that's like it's like 8 years ago. It's not massive in the grand scheme of things when we look at actually how long we've been looking at producing devices, many hundreds of years, if not longer. And then we look at the term femtech and specialising in devices for women. And I think it's interesting to say as well that, you know, half the population are women, but yet we don't see enough innovation in that sector. And certainly I think when we go to conferences and we don't see a lot on femtech there, or have them discussions, or have, you know, the stands around femtech. But I think it's interesting to talk around that whole aspect of, you know, when you do talk about women related issues, things like, you know, the menstrual cycle, that you will have that whole men clamming up maybe and you know, essentially not wanting to talk about that. But it's a natural cycle of life, and it's something that we should talk more about. You look at it and you think around that, and you think, you know, there is so many male investors that actually they need to understand the issues and complications with women's health, and, you know, be able to deal with that and listen. Because one of the issues I think around innovation of femtech devices is not understanding the issues that women go through to alleviate that, to bring the devices that help to alleviate any health issues or problems, and innovate for them. But I think when we go from a regulatory perspective, it's not necessarily as impacted as it would be from innovation, and around kind of solving the problems that women face day in, day out.
Okay, Laura, well, that's all the questions that I have. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Olivia. I've really, really enjoyed myself.